Welcome to a new episode of the Maya Life Health Talk. My name is Miriam Steurer, and today we are exploring a topic at the very heart of the scientifically grounded Maya Life Health concept, the human microbiome. It is one of the most fascinating and influential systems of our body, shaping digestion, immunity, moods, and even long-term health. To guide us, I'm joined by Professor Dr. Victor Ceballos, Head of Division of Nutritional Sciences at the Karl Landsteiner University in Krems. And together with Maya Life, he's leading a pioneering research cooperation to study the microbiome in depth and integrate findings directly into the Maya Life health concept. Professor Ceballos, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for the kind invitation.
Could you explain in simple terms what exactly the microbiome is and why it is such a central factor in human health and also within the Maya Life health concept?
Yes, of course. So the microbiome is defined as a group of microorganisms that are living within our body. They interact with our cells and they include different organisms, for example, bacteria and virus, which are the mainly studied within the scientific community. For us, this is very important because we don't really know in detail how those organisms and the interaction between them and our cells contribute to health and disease.
How big is this ecosystem?
It's huge. If we think about probably if we compare with the number of cells that we have, then we have much, much more microbes living within us, but we don't know. We don't know many things about the behavior. We don't know many things about the interaction between the different microbes and how they interact with our cells, with our body in different circumstances. For example, if we are affected by a specific disease, that interaction is completely different than if we are, for example, healthy or affected by another disease. So that level of complexity is quite interesting for us.
Gut health has always been at the core of Maya Life. But is the microbiome also important in other body regions, such as the skin or the mouth?
Absolutely, absolutely. There are many concepts that are constantly emerging and concepts that are constantly being developed. For example, what is the interaction between the skin and the gut? You may think that these are two very separate organs and potentially there is no relationship between them, but the linking factor could be the microbiome. And there is a concept which is called the gut-skin axis, which reflects that interaction, which indicates that, for example, a type of the skin disease may be in a way controlled by the microbiome and by the interactions within the small intestines.
Many heard about the candida. It is on the skin, or?
You could have, depending where the effect might be, it could be also in the gastrointestinal system. Again, the interaction with different types of microbes affecting the skin, affecting the intestines, affecting the gut, is quite clear in many ways. What we don't know is how exactly that happens, how those microbes transfer, whether if you change certain things within your diet might be benefiting you in a positive or negative way.
We often only hear about the gut, but it's eye-opening to realize that our entire body is home to these helpful microbes. And how do bacteria, viruses, and fungi interact within this ecosystem? And what happens when this balance is disrupted?
There is a term that is usually referred to this level of disruption, which is called dysbiosis. And that is that certain types of pathogens, bacteria, for example, that have been identified as or have been associated with disease, tend to increase in numbers. And this affects the numbers of bacteria, for example, that are associated with health. So when there is a discrepancy in the number of bacteria and the population, and when this is simplified, this is usually associated with a disease scenario. Now, of course, there is an interaction between different microorganisms. virus and bacteria can interact with each other, and of course other microorganisms, fungi of course. And that level of complexity is still need to be clarified. Mm-hmm. So it's not very straightforward. At the moment we know certain patterns that occur. So if you examine a group of people with a specific disease and certain characteristics that are related to the group, you could see certain patterns in terms of what type of bacteria, which associations may occur more often if you compare it to a healthy population. But of course, if you add the complexity of virus, if you add the complexity of fungi, you may see a slightly different picture. So the more we know, the more we add it to that to understand how exactly dysbiosis is occurring, and how can we prevent it, and how can we help to bring back that individual to health.
The ecosystem begins with the birth. Is there a big difference between C-section and giving normal birth?
Yes, there is quite a few studies indicating a clear differences between children being born with C-section or natural birth. And that could be due to the contact with the microbiome at birth and the level of interaction that may start developing in both sections. So clearly with C-section, you will have less chances to encounter that type of microbes compared to the normal birth. And that has been documented in many publications. There is also some associations indicating what the effect of that might be in later life. And it could be an association with other diseases. So it could get very complex in terms of indicating, for example, a simple difference like that.
Researchers also talk about the gut-brain axis. At MyaLife, stress management and mental balance are central pillars. Could you explain how the microbiome influences mood, stress, and even conditions like anxiety or depression?
Yes, this will be another example similar to the gut-skin axis. There's also the gut-brain axis, and you probably noticed that the gut occupies a central role here. Again, these are two separate organs. There is certain type of communication through nerve system, but also another type of communication through different types of cellular interactions between the two. And then we have the microbiome. Certain bacteria, for example, produces certain types of compounds, and those compounds have an effect on cells, and they could also interact and be affecting some other organs, such as the brain. There are some studies indicating a potential positive effect between depression, but also other diseases affecting the brain, neurodegenerative diseases, for example, Alzheimer's. And of course, this is a very interesting topic that needs to be developed further, that needs to be explained, and that we try and also to look into.
So if someone has a depression, it sounds so easy to give to the person the right bacteria and then everything is good.
I wish the solution would be as simple as that. Unfortunately, it's a little bit more complex. But we could start with something such as looking at the diet. There are, again, different studies suggesting a very clear interaction in terms of how is your relation with food and what type of food products might be contributing to modify the microbiome. Mm-hmm. Some studies indicate that if you follow certain types of diet, then you could contribute to a modification of the microbiome, and that modification may affect your status in terms of depression or any other clinical outcomes.
We come back later to this topic. If someone's microbiome becomes unbalanced, how might it show up in their well-being, and how does the MyaLife approach help to restore harmony?
Again, the microbiome can be affected by several factors. One of the main ones is diet. So if we have a type of habits that include what we usually consider an unhealthy type of diet, that will likely be reflected in the microbiome. Having said that, it is also important to consider that there are other factors that will also contribute to the microbiome. For example, the quality of sleep, physical activity are two key examples that will also have an effect on the microbiome. There are many other things that will contribute to that, but if we are looking after our diet and somehow neglecting the other two aspects, then of course this will be hard to achieve in terms of an optimal type of health.
It shows how delicate the balance is and how easily modern life can disturb it.
Yes, yes.
Which lifestyle factors most disturb the microbiome, and how do elements like processed foods, stress, lack of sleep, you told me, or certain medications relate to what the Maya Life Health concept has long emphasized?
I think what's interesting about the whole approach, what I have observed, is the combination of different elements, taking into account that there are multiple factors that will affect the microbiome. If those factors, perhaps not all of them, but a good proportion of them, are taken care of by looking at, let's say, exercise, looking at quality of sleep, maybe some techniques that are being used, I guess the outcome or the chances of improving that are quite high, comparing to, let's say, only trying diet for a period of time. So I guess that more integrative approach is quite helpful.
I've heard that the microbes has their own rhythm. They also need sleep that they can work for us. Is that true?
Yes, in a way, yes, yes. That is absolutely right. At the end, they are living organisms. They also require a type of food, which is a substrate for them to continue. And we are providing that because we are hosting them within us. And the type of food that we consume is going to contribute to the health of those microorganisms. At the same time, other factors, again, like you mentioned, the lack of sleep, the stress, many other factors will also contribute to either encourage certain types of bacteria to thrive or other types of bacteria to stop being producing key metabolites that are being associated with health.
It's incredible to see that they are working for us every day.
Yes, that's absolutely right. We think that we are a single organism, yes, that is doing everything, but in reality,
no,
we have lots of help.
Yeah. Which type of diets do you usually recommend to support a healthy microbiome?
That's a very interesting question. So if we look at general recommendations, usually we have this very concept of the healthy diet. But then again, it's hard to define what a healthy diet is. Mm-hmm. There are certain recommendations and some studies suggesting specific types of diet. For example, the Mediterranean diet. Some studies suggest following a diet that is restricted of fat. And some others suggesting increasing the consumption of fat and reduce the consumption of carbohydrates. I believe it's quite hard to put a diet that will fit for everyone. It is important also to know yourself in terms of what will fit to you, to your lifestyle and to your general well-being. I think we know each other more than anyone else and we will know how that will help us. However, it is also important to think about habits. We are creatures of habits and we tend to repeat things quite often, even without realizing.
Mm-hmm.
And if we decide for whatever reason to follow a diet or consume certain products that we now know or we have evidence that are not the best or they could be replaced with something better, then it's very hard for us to make that change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be one good exercise to start making small modifications. There are many recommendations that we know work that are quite helpful. For example, the increased consumption of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that we could add to our diet. The proportion or the amount of food that we consume, that is also something that we could add to our diet. How we eat and the behavior that we have when we're eating. Are we eating alone very quickly because we'll have to do something else next? Or are we taking our time to eat? Do we eat with people that we like, with our family, with friends? Or are we just finding a small corner somewhere and we rush to eat a sandwich to go to the next part of our job? Those types of behavior is good to reflect on and to think about how is that going to help us. If we repeat that very often and if we do that as a routine all the time, then the chances of developing a disease or even reaching a stage in which it will be very hard to come back are quite high. So all those aspects are important to consider.
Also to break the routine and eat not every day the same breakfast or lunch.
Yes, I mean, there are so many products. You know, when we go to a supermarket, we tend to just buy the same things. But if you spend a little bit of time and you start looking what is available, you will realize that there are many choices and many things that you never try. Give it a try, see if you like it, see if that modifies or affects your behavior. And I think that level of variety is quite helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And it also makes a bit more interesting the way we cook, the way we prepare things, and the way we live, which is also very important.
Professor, I've heard that we should eat about 30 different foods a week, and then we have a healthy gut microbiome.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't put a number to it, but going back to the previous topic in terms of increasing variety, try to make some modifications in our daily habits, that probably goes into that direction of trying to increase the number of different products that we try. Whether this is 30, 10 or 2, that's something that it will depend how available you are, how courageous you are into making modifications within your lifestyle. But certainly it goes to the right direction. If we start doing, even if it's only 2 or 3 things, I think that's a positive step towards something that will evolve more.
What do you think about fermented products?
Fermented products are absolutely important part of the diet. They've been traditionally eaten for many, many generations. If you think about different societies, this was a good way to preserve aliments or food for a long period of time, which is quite helpful. And the relation that we had with that type of foods, it's been happening for many years. For some reason, some of those are being neglected and perhaps consumed less than it were before, but in general, they are quite helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I recall 2 or 3 studies in which they look and compare what will happen with the microbiote if you increase the consumption of fermented foods compared to maintaining a standard Western diet, and you will see that the microbiome is affected positively by the consumption of those products.
A lot of people are taking medical probiotics. What do you think about this?
Trying to replicate what is the perfect recipe for the bacteria that we need is extremely complex. What we usually do is we look at the whole population, and sometimes we see patterns in which a specific bacteria tends to perform well. And then we make some associations and we see that bacteria is related to a positive health outcome. Then, of course, we have this thing in which we see bacteria X or Y, for example, Lactobacillus, is quite beneficial for us. And then we try to see if that can be somehow marketed and incorporated within a specific product. In theory, there is nothing wrong with that because there is evidence suggesting that. Mm-hmm. But we always have to think about that this is not the work of one type of bacteria,
mm-hmm.
but of different types. This is work of a community. And even if you supplement one positive bacteria, we wouldn't know really how is the whole community at the end. There's nothing wrong with that, but we also have to think about that this is quite complex and it will require hopefully not too long until we understand what is this perfect recipe or if we can find a way in which we can implement that better.
In our daily routine, what do you recommend? Which food do you recommend? What is good for our gut microbiome and how does it look like?
A variety of different products that includes different types of grains, different types of
whole
vegetables,
grains.
Whole grains. Mm-hmm. You can try different types of fruits, different types of vegetables. You could try different fermented food products. Some of them that are quite traditionally here, I understand.
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut, for example, very delicious, very good. And, you know, it's part of what the culture is, mm-hmm. which I think is very good. But also other products such as kefir.
Mm-hmm.
That is also...
I thought it's just fungi, but you told me no.
It's an interesting constellation of different other bacteria and other microorganisms. It's quite helpful. Mm-hmm. It's quite tasty. And I think it's also relatively common here and in other places nearby. That would be one recommendation.
My grandma did it by herself.
That's amazing. I do have it myself too.
Really?
Yes, it's relatively simple, as I say.
How do you make it?
Well, you just have the grains and then you add milk. And after that, you obtain kefir. After a few days, you can keep it at room temperature. But if you want to reduce the activity, you can put it in the fridge. So you reduce the temperature to 4 degrees. So it's quite manageable and it's very good.
If you had to give our listeners just three easy, practical and science-based tips for a healthier microbiome, what would they be?
I would say try to be innovative and courageous when you eat. Think about that every time that you eat, you are looking after your body. If you have to spend more time or money in the food that you buy or in the way you prepare it, try to do it, because it's the best investment that you could do for yourself more than anything else. Try to get enough time for sleep and do some exercise as much as possible. I know that sometimes it's very difficult, but... As much as possible, yes. Every time that you have the opportunity, and it doesn't have to be very strong. It could be something light. It could be anything that you feel necessary, but it's an important activity. The same as we have to eat every day, I think we'll have to do some type of physical activity every day.
I love how simple and practical these are. It shows that we don't always need complicated solutions, just consistent, everyday choices can make a huge difference. Professor Ceballos, thank you so much for this inspiring conversation and for sharing insights.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to all our listeners, thank you for joining us. Stay healthy and see you next time on a Maya Life Health Talk.
Oh, glad that you like it. I-